You're listening to a download from North Sound 2. Listen again. Missed it first time? Catch up at northsound2.com/listen again.
Hello and good morning. Frank Gilfeather here with another of our Sunday morning get-togethers as we rake over the issues of the day. And please, let's get things up and running as soon as possible. You can call me on Aberdeen 40 10 35 with your views on anything, really, under the sun. What, for example, are your thoughts on the 3-month jail sentence imposed on Stan Murray, a salmon poacher who has failed to comply with a ban from the Granham Estate in Aberdeen, which dates back 43 years? That's the ban, not the estate. Did the sheriff who sent the 78-year-old to Craiginch's prison get it badly wrong? Or was the poacher pensioner asking for trouble by revisiting the estate? And is the freezing of the council tax by Finance Secretary John Swinney the big deal the Scottish Government claim it is? With gas and electricity charges soaring and fuel, food and other prices rising, is freezing council tax just a drop in the ocean? Let's hear from you. Aberdeen 40 10 35. Now then, if you live in the Hazelhead area of Aberdeen and you're against proposals to build a recycling plant there, I'd love to hear from you. Aberdeen 40 10 35 is the number. But of course, there are no restrictions on today's topics. I'm happy to listen to your point of view, whatever it is that you're calling about. But do call. And in fact, let's go right to the phone lines now and talk to Graham. Good morning, Graham.
Morning, Frank.
How are you today?
Oh, not too bad.
Good.
I would like to speak about HMRC, the Inland Revenue.
Yes.
Everybody in the country knows that Britain is in a sort of financial mess with a big deficit.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing I kind of understand is the Inland Revenue are closing businesses down left, right and centre. And they're actually forcing businesses out of business, mm-hmm. simply because they're demanding that tax be paid on a certain day. And unless that tax is paid on that day, if you're a day late, I've been told you get fined £5,000 automatically.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how can a business, carry on if that's happening? The other thing I would like to speak about is that if a business is liquidated, mm-hmm. If the Inland Revenue comes in and says, oh, we need work tax, and the business can't pay it, obviously you have to bring in administrators to that business.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the workers are going to be sacked, so the government will have to pay them redundancy money. They'll also have to pay them unemployment benefit,
mm-hmm.
and possibly income support. So I really kind of see the justification in the hard-ass approach that the Inland Revenue are taking on businesses.
Well, I have great sympathy with that point of view.
Let me say, I'm not a business owner.
Right, okay, I was going to ask you that. But here's the issue. There are enormously wealthy business people in this country who have the wherewithal to buy the best lawyers, the best legal advice, who can advise them on tax avoidance. We don't call it tax evasion because that's criminal. Tax avoidance. So you've got people like, for example, Sir Philip Green, who owns the Topshop empire, who doesn't pay tax in this country.
All right, okay.
And it really annoys me that the tax people go after the small businesses and put them into real difficulties by demanding what is piddling amounts of tax when some of the bigger guys are escaping with enormous sums without paying tax.
That
really annoys me. And so why have you got this bee in your bonnet?
Well, I know a couple of companies recently that have brought in the administrators.
Yeah.
One of them had got about £1 million worth of work on their books.
Mm-hmm.
And, I kind of see the sense in sort of forcing these companies to close down, because that's what the Inland Revenue are doing.
Yeah. And as you said, it's not good, Graham, for the economy, because they're going to throw people out of work, and therefore these people don't have any spending power if they're unemployed. And it seems to be defeating the whole kind of ethos of, well, certainly of the Conservative government just now.
It's not so much Cameron's big society. Shortly, it's going to be Cameron's bankrupt society.
Yeah.
The way things are going, a lot more businesses this next year will be out of business. They'll just go bankrupt simply because the banks are nearly lending and the Inland Revenue are sort of hounding them for tax.
That's
now,
right.
The thing about the Inland Revenue, I believe, is that they won't sort of accommodate, they're totally inflexible in that they won't accommodate payment plans. You know, if a business has got money, poor cash flow, and it's totally underfinanced, the revenue won't allow them to sort of pay so much at a time. It has to be paid in a certain date. Everything done to their rules.
Yes. I've heard that from business people who say that, certainly in the small business area, where they're totally inflexible, as you said. It's kind of it's now or nothing kind of thing. We'll close you down.
Am I right in thinking that they went after Hearts Football Club and Hearts had to pay them $2.3 million or something to stave off...
Yes, Hearts, I don't know the sums, but you're right, they did.
I think Rangers as well.
Rangers, it said, owe them £2.8 million just now. But, of course, there's another issue with Rangers where they've got this this other thing sitting in the wings where they could end up having to pay £40 million in tax because of sums they've paid players in offshore accounts and so on. So, you know, we're facing great difficulties. Companies, we tend to forget about companies who are going through real difficult times just now, to keep afloat.
These companies are the backbone of Britain.
Exactly. They're the wealth creators, yes.
Okay, Graham, Frank.
Okay, many thanks for your call.
Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Good morning to you, Alec. Alec Irvine's on the phone. We haven't heard from you for a wee while.
Hello, Frank. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, fine. I've still been a regular listener. I just give other people a chance to talk. No,
sure.
Right. My main problem is, and I'm not jumping on the bandwagon, Frank.
Mm-hmm.
2 years ago, I spoke to you since then. 2 years ago, you had Duncan Fraser in the studio.
Yeah.
Chief Executive of Aberdeen Football Club.
Yes.
I debated with him the way forward with Aberdeen Football Club. That was a time before they'd set the fact they're moving to Cove, etc.
Yeah.
Now, since then, very briefly, January 2009, Jimmy Calderwood, along with Jimmy Nicol, signed a new contract.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so did Willie Miller. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the summer of 2009, because Jimmy Calderwood didn't meet expectations, in inverted commas, he was dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
2009, 2010, and into the new season, Mark McGee took over. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Bearing in mind, under Jimmy Calderwood's regime, Aberdeen went to Europa League, Bayern Munich, TV rights.
Yeah.
Also, they sold Russell Anderson. So the value of that transition kept up over between two and three million, depends what paper you read.
Yeah.
Now, they said at a time, Duncan Fraser said at a time, they're investing that type of money on a youth investment. Now, apart from selling Chris McGuire, etc., which is a different story, the fact is, Mark McGee took over.
Mm-hmm.
Now, reasons we all know, he's unsuccessful, right? Whether you got back for the board or no, is open to conjecture.
Uh-huh.
Then, in December this year, we know Craig Brown and his mate Archie Knox took over. Now, it seems like a common denominator. Now, I know, as your previous caller stated, Scottish football is in a bad way. But I'd like you to invite Duncan Fraser something in the near future to come on and explain what he said in the papers this week. He's chatted with Craig Brown, Donegal Eagles, about how we can help him, etc.
Mm-hmm.
The point that annoys me and thousands of other stay-away football fans is they're now willing to sell Petodi, Stuart to Melton do the housing, the sale Cove Rangers ground at Island Park for housing, they move to a cosy place at Calder Park and a big stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're willing to invest between 30 and 35 million, depending on the paper you read, on new stadia.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing that concerns me, apart from travelling from the north, which 70% of support comes from the north Aberdeenshire area, Peterhead, Fraserburgh, etc., the fact that annoys me, they're saying they'll raise a lot of investment with the sale of Petodi, the sale of Park, etc., and a cosy set-up at Cove. When I stay at Cove, and I've no objection to that, the point that invests me, there's an old saying, and I'm sorry for rambling on, that annoys me, there's an old saying up here, all for court to no drawers. What's going to happen next 2 or 3 years, they'll have a lovely 22,000-seater stadium up at Cove, and they're going to have a team on the park which can match the criteria of the stadium. Now, if they're saying there's private money coming in to boost the finances of building a new stadium, they've got to rethink, and I know things are tight financially, they've got to rethink about the investment the club gets in playing. There's no point in a big stadium with no fans to watch it, because 4,000 people on Tuesday against East Frank, you know what I'm trying to say.
Well, the bottom line is, if you don't have a winning team, you don't have the fans coming in, and therefore the finances drop.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So all I'm saying
is... But are you suggesting, though, Alec, that somebody out there should be putting money into this football club?
Well, Frank, if I've got time to talk to you, I'll speak slowly and concise like a normal person. It's funny, Sir Ian Wood is willing to invest $50 million in Union Terrace.
Uh-huh.
Right? We want to invest $50 million in Petardry.
Why would he?
Well, wait a minute, Frank. The fact is, Stuart DeMille is a businessman.
Yeah.
All I'm saying is, if they can raise between 30 and 35 million of private money and also sell a Petardry in Allen Park to build a new stadium, they've got to have some form of investment on the pitch. Because at the moment...
I don't disagree with you. You're absolutely right.
What I'm saying, Frank, is at the moment they're saying Downing Petardry is not fit for purpose. I'll tell you, the way things are going, Frank, I'm maybe cynical, I'm being actual factual. The Minters will demolish part of the ground and reinvest in rebuilding Petardry because the crowds are getting... earlier in the season, there's only 40,000 home against Celtic.
This is the way it's going. It's 11,500 people they need to break even.
Right.
So they're now losing something in the region of £50,000 to £60,000 a game.
Right.
By not getting the break even point. And on top of that, their corporate entertaining and so on that happens on a match day is disappearing. I know many people who have these executive boxes, companies who have executive boxes, who can't get people to go and see them on a Saturday afternoon because there are better things to do as far as they're concerned.
Frank, I appreciate the chance to talk. That's why I didn't phone so much. I tend to ramble on. The fact is, I've turned down, when I name who buy, I've turned down opportunity to get a freebie Petardry because I didn't think it's worth it. But it's so, as I say, we're talking about the finances. Now, surely, and I like Duncan Frizz to come on, because he's said he's spoken to Craig Brown about how to can help. All I'm saying is, if you want to get a winning team on the park, you want to get fans coming through.
He knows that. I spoke to him on Thursday, it's a very point he made. He said, the bottom line is this, if we don't have a winning team, we can't get people to come in.
What I'd like him to do, come on, sometime, and I'll either debate it with him along with a lot of the people. The fact is, he's got to show proof to the fans, like me, who I'm now a stable. Frank, I used to go to Petardry in the glory days, the 60s, the 70s, and the 80s. So I'm a stable supporter through choice. I can afford to go. I choose not to go. The cold hard facts are, if it's 35 million you get from private investment to sell a Petardry, like I said, he's got to invest more. There's no point to saying to Craig Brown, but help you all if you can. The budgets have got, I know Scottish football's in a sorry state, but the way things are, unless they invest more money or try and keep their players, they're going nowhere and they have no fan base whatsoever. So the fact is, he's got to come on and tell the normal man in the street what he intends to do to get the winning team in the park, which means some form of more investment again at present.
Okay, Alec, that's a challenge I'll take up.
I'll be listening every week. I'll easily delight to talk to him face to face like I did 2 years ago. Not a problem.
Okay.
Thanks again, Frank.
Good, Alec. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
There we are. That's a challenge from Alec Irvine there to Duncan Fraser, the chief executive of Aberdeen Football Club, to discuss the issues surrounding that football club. Raymond's waiting, so are others. Remember, you can get your call in as quickly as possible, please, today, because we like to hear as many voices as we can on the show. We're back after this.
North Sound 2. Listen again.
Welcome back to the programme. Let's have your calls on any of the issues of the day that you might have an opinion about. Aberdeen 40 10 35 is the number. Let's go and talk to Raymond. Good morning, Raymond.
Good morning.
Hi, thank you for being patient. You've been waiting
That's
a wee
okay.
while.
That's all.
Fire away.
It's about, excuse me, it's about this chap, 78-year-old.
Yes.
What was it? Stan Murray.
Stan Murray. Let me just fill in the listeners, Raymond, before we go on about this story. Stan Murray is 78. He was sent to prison for 3 months last week because he has been trying to have an injunction which banned him from the Granham estate in Aberdeen, which dates back 43 years. He's been trying to have this injunction lifted, and he's been going on the estate and waving placards and so on, taken to court for being back there and refusing to comply with his ban, and they've sent him to prison for 3 months. Right, there you are. That's what we're talking about. What do you think?
Yeah, well, what I really think is, I think it's a bit silly what you've done by sending him to prison. I think it's totally ludicrous what they actually done. But I must admit as well, Mr. Murray should not have been walking up and down with placards. Because that was antagonistic, is it? Because he's winding up the person. I can't remember the person's name.
It's a man called David Patton who has the Granham estate,
and he owns it.
He owns it, and it was in his father's time that Stan Murray was taken up for poaching. Now, this Stan Murray was poaching 40 to 50 salmon per night using cages. So that's when the ban was imposed, 43
Frank,
years ago.
I can tell you this for now. I actually know, not Mr. Murray, but some people used to actually go poaching.
Yes.
In different rivers. And if he could catch 20 to 50 salmon a night, he would own the land that guy doesn't want him to come back onto. And you better believe it.
But they were claiming that he was using cages at the time. But let's not go into that. The point is, should he have been sent to jail?
No way.
No.
No,
and I think everybody recognises. I think even David Patton recognises that maybe, and it's not, it wasn't his call. It was the sheriff who made the call that he should go to jail. I think that sheriff has been a wee bit over enthusiastic.
You've got this thing you've got here, right?
Uh-huh.
We've got people that steal, commit assault and things.
Yeah.
They get community service.
Yes.
They get a warning.
Yeah.
They get told not to do it again. Landowner against a pensioner, and the courts are always going to rule for the landowner.
Yeah.
It's absolutely stupid.
It is.
That man should be released right now.
Yeah. I agree with you. And I think probably with the kind of adverse publicity that's been happening in terms of the sheriff's decision, I think that's likely to happen. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
I think the sheriff should go to jail for 3 months.
Good, Raymond. That's great.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for that, Frank.
Bye then. Bye. Let's speak to Thomas Haney is on the line. Good morning.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm fine. Is it Tom or Thomas?
It's Tam.
Tam, okay, Tam. You want to talk about Scottish football?
It's just Scottish football in general. I was listening to the gentleman earlier about Aberdeen Football Club.
Yeah.
It's not just Aberdeen Football Club, it's the whole SPL, SFA. It's totally underfunded. The money that's coming into the SPL is just a drop in the ocean compared to what goes into the Premiership and the Championship.
Yeah.
Clubs that come up to the Championship and get promoted, they get in excess of £20 million just for being promoted. And then when they get demoted, they get a severance package of in excess of £10-15 million to ease the pain. You know what I mean? The exposure of Scottish football now is minimal because you can't even see any games on television anymore. You have to have Sky to watch it on ESPN.
Yeah.
An American company with Scottish football games, I mean, what good is that? You know what I mean?
Well, it's interesting. It's not going to get any better, is it?
It's getting worse.
Yeah.
It's absolutely getting worse. I mean, it took a guy like Fergus McCann to come into Celtic Park and turn that around.
Uh-huh.
And even though we're one of the biggest clubs in Scotland, we're still financially struggling. We don't have any European football. Even though we're into Europa League just now, it's pennies compared to the Champions League.
Well, that's right. And the way things are going, of course, it looks like every year now, every season, whoever wins and whoever is the runner-up, so it'll be Celtic Rangers, in the SBL every year, will now have to pre-qualify for the Champions League.
Yeah. They've got to play at least one game now.
Yeah.
And that's because of the coefficient. If you look at the English Premiership, they have 8 teams in Europe.
But nothing. But, you know, I'm thinking, Tam, nothing, it seems nothing can rescue the situation.
No, nothing's got, I mean, even no matter how much private money comes in, they'll buy the club, they'll turn it around for a little spell, then the money will dip again. It all comes down to the TV rights, it all comes down to sponsorship, and if you're not performing, maybe they want to sponsor the team. We can't buy the players, we've not got the buying power of like Manchester United, Man City, Arsenal, to bring in the top quality players to take us forward in Europe. We can't do that. We can't spend 80, 50, 60, 70 million on one player.
No, because we are just a small country in a league, a football league that really is pretty irrelevant these days.
Exactly. I mean, it's just as you say, we're just the also-rans in Europe. We just had to make up the numbers.
Yeah.
And we need 32 teams in Europe. We're there.
Yeah.
The coefficient says that we have to perform at a certain level every year to keep getting teams in.
Do you actually go to football matches at all?
I was a season ticket holder at Celtic Park for a while. But when I moved to Aberdeen, I found it very hard to get in for the weekends because
of
my shift.
And the other thing too is that people have got more to do now on a Saturday. Football used to be almost like a religion. You went there every Saturday.
Exactly. When I was younger, every Saturday, home games.
Yeah. Because there was really nothing else to do. But now there are, you know, so many things opening up. And it may be argued that men are more family orientated than they were 20, 30, 40 years ago.
That's true. I've got a family myself. I mean, if I go to the European games now because they're midweek.
Yeah.
But even so, the prices of the tickets now are prohibitive. I bought a package for the last Champions League for Celtic and it cost me nearly £100 just for three games. And that was just for the tickets. Then I've got accommodation and petrol money to get down there. So it is really prohibitive. The prices of the tickets are getting astronomical. Now, you're looking at a home game for Celtic Park, just a normal game, you're looking at maybe £20 a ticket. Champions League are 32, 35.
If you look at Pittodrie, for example, I think the main stand is something like 26 or 28 pounds.
That's ludicrous. I mean, I'm not trying to slate Aberdeen in any way. I mean, they have been a brilliant team in the past. They've never known they might get there again in the future, but they've got the reality in the eye and say, well, our ticket prices, we want fans to come in here. We'd rather have 20,000 fans sitting in the stands paying £10, £12 each than having 8,000 fans paying £25 each.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, a full house is better than an empty house, you know what I mean?
I agree with you. I agree.
And they've got to maybe look at that.
I think they should, and I think, you know, that would generate a wee bit more kind of interest, and it would give the players a lift if they're playing to a fuller stadium.
Exactly. Another thing is, you know, a lot of people would rather sit at home and watch it on Sky now.
Yeah.
Than all the hassle of going to the game.
I think you're probably right. Yeah.
Parking up, then having to wait 2 hours to go to the parking lot and stuff like, you know.
And the cardboard hamburgers at halftime.
In a week, Bovril.
Tam, I think you've nailed it there. I think you've got it right.
Yep.
Okay, thanks for your call this morning.
Bye.
Bye. There you are then. So we've been pulled between Stan Murray, the poacher who's been jailed for 3 months, and the state of Scottish football. That's what I like about this programme. You never know where you are. Let's have your views on anything that we can discuss this morning. Aberdeen 40, 10, 35. Let me just go back for an instant to talk about Stan Murray, the 78-year-old pensioner who was jailed. He was done for poaching 43 years ago, and he was banned from the Granham estate. He wants that lifted. Because of his actions in trying to have this ban lifted, he's been sent to jail for failing to comply with that injunction. But earlier in the week, North Sound spoke to Helen Todd, who represents the Ramblers Association of Scotland.
We're really astonished to hear that somebody was being sent to prison to try and get a ban lifted that's 43 years old. Everybody in Scotland has the right to roam, and riverbanks are a wonderful place to go for a walk, especially as you're getting older. They're not quite so steep to walk upon, and everybody should be able to have that opportunity. And it just seems crazy that this anomaly is allowed to exist. As far as I understand it, from what I've read in the press, it was because of poaching. But poaching took place in 1968, and I would say he's certainly served his sentence, if you like, for that long ago by having this interdict against him for so many years. And now, when we have this right to roam legislation in Scotland, as long as people are acting responsibly, they can walk pretty much anywhere, with obviously certain exceptions, but for him to want to walk along the riverbank with his grandchildren, it seems perfectly reasonable to us to exercise his rights in that way. And so it seems very odd that this interim interdict, in fact, should still be in place, and he's finding it so difficult to get it removed. Quite admire him for taking this point of principle. It is really highlighting, because I understand from the press that he's not the only person in this situation. There are others who are also, you know, still faced with this lifetime ban, if you like. And it just seems totally out of all perspective to ban somebody from using their rights to go for a peaceful walk. And, you know, we're always being told to get out, take more exercise, and that's particularly important for older people to keep active. And the more active they are, the higher their quality of life will be. And so he's being told he can't do that. It just seems crazy.
Right, that was Helen Todd from Rambler Scotland. Is she right? Should Stan Murray have the right to roam on the estate along the riverbank at Granham in Aberdeen? Let's hear your thoughts on that. Is this ban just too long, and has the sheriff gone too far by jailing him for 3 months? Aberdeen 401035 is the number to call. There was also an issue this week you may be aware of, that the Aberdeen residents round about the Hazel Head area got together, and they're angry at the thought of an 8,000-ton recycling plant up at Hazelhead Park. Now, around 100 people came along to Hazelhead Academy at a kind of protest meeting the other night. They say that the Green Belt area will be turned into industrial recycling, and that is not what they want. What do you think? Are they being NIMBYs, or is it a good place to have a recycling centre up there near Hazelhead Park? And if you live in the area, how will that impact on you and where you live and the traffic that that comes along because of that? And you may remember that Graham phoned in our first call, which was about small companies being hit by the tax man, whom he says are really inflexible. He says that when they demand their money, they want it now. Well, Gavin has been in touch. He says his small company was forced to let two employees go after the revenue had decided that they weren't paying enough tax. Now, he says that the banks refused to loan him any money, and the high tax and loss of employees leaves them almost unable to compete with the bigger businesses that are in his kind of area of business. And I guess if that's the case with Gavin, it must be rolling out right along the country in terms of small businesses who are finding it so difficult to compete against the bigger boys. Now, if you're a small businessman or woman and you're finding it difficult, you can't get a loan from the bank, you can't get the tax man to be a wee bit more flexible, then give me a call and tell me of your situation. Aberdeen 401035 is the number, and I'd like to hear from you on any of the issues of the day. And I think that just about covers the main stories that were on my mind this week, or the last week, I should say, as we're beginning a new week. But of course, within all our communities and all our areas, there are stories going on there that you know about and I don't, but I like to hear about them. Let's hear what's going on in your area, in your community, by giving me a call on Aberdeen 401035. So we've covered one or two issues, and let's hear what Ali has to say about whatever he's on. Good morning.
Morning. How are you?
I'm fine. Great, Ali. Hazelhead. Do you live in Hazelhead?
No, I don't. You know, but I'm up there usually once or sometimes twice a week.
Right.
And I've been saying for some time now, you would have to really put a lot of effort into to seeing how many clowns you could get together to run Hazelhead as bad as it's being done. I mean, I don't know what the council are doing, but the maze, first of all, was left to go all to hell. The zoo, or the remains of the zoo, as it were, is a shambles.
Yeah.
to close the cafe is just beyond belief. The roads up there is like something out of a war film. And I'm not exaggerating that. Yeah. I don't know if you've been up to Hazelhead recently, but the roads are absolutely unbelievable.
Well, it's funny you should say that. I've had a couple of calls from people who have said exactly the same thing. They just cannot believe the state of the roads there with the potholes.
It's almost as if the council are using the road as, thank God the roads went like that, it'll maybe stop people going.
Mm.
I don't know if there's something going on at Hazelhead that they want it to be run down, but you would almost believe that someone had locked the asylum and given the keys to the inmates, because the way the council are running Hazelhead, they will finish Hazelhead. And Hazelhead has been traditionally, I was looking at some old cine film the other day from 1964,
mm-hmm.
and Hazelhead was just beautiful.
Yeah.
And the cafe was there and everything. To close that cafe and leave it the way it is, and then what we'll get eventually, if something's not done soon, is, oh, believe it or not, the building's in such a state, we're gonna knock it down. We might even build a civic square for the people of Hazelhead. You know, we'll get all this kind of rot.
Well,
something needs to be done, and it needs to be done now.
Yeah, well, of course, the bottom line is that as they'll tell you, that there isn't any money. What do they do? What would you do with a cafe, for example?
Well, I would either rent the cafe out to the way it was before.
Yeah.
It was run very well before. I think it was Chalmers that run it, but it was a good cafe. The manager guy was very good.
Uh-huh.
Or I would sell the bloody thing if you have to. But get it up and running. You can't have an area like that, a centre in a city which is supposed to be the European capital of Europe. The oil capital of Europe.
Yeah.
And you can't have a place like that and not have somewhere to eat.
But the point is, Ali, that this place, one would assume, but doesn't make money.
It would make money if the council didn't interfere with the running of it and just left it, had a set rent or sold it. You can bet your bottom dollar if a private company took over that, it would make money. It's the same as the ski slope. It's the same as anything the council have to do with. They spend a fortune in surveys and people that overstaff things. It's beyond belief. If you put a private company in there, if you offered that to someone... I mean, for God's sake, there's a guy turning the old police box at Hazelhead into a chip shop.
Yeah.
You know, really, if a private company went in or the council got some decent management in to take hold of the thing would run okay, but money.
Do you not think, you think they don't care?
I think someone just moves it along. Like most things in the council, move it onto someone else's desk. Let's run it down to the stage where it goes to another department now, the department that decides what's going to be knocked down and what isn't.
You'll remember, Ali, that not so very long ago, Brian Hendry, a local businessman, had come in with plans to redevelop Hazelhead in terms of a championship golf course.
That's right.
And all that kind of. Would it have been better going down that road, do you think?
Possibly anything, Frank, would be better than the way Hazelhead is just now. If you took anyone from any other city up to a municipal park and golf course and all the rest of it, if you took anyone up there and showed them the state of that place,
mm-hmm.
they would be shocked, let alone a city like Aberdeen that's supposed to be prospering. And the no money thing, well, they can always find money to pull in consultants and spend millions and doing surveys and would this work, would that work. They can always find money for that. But when it's to do with where people go, and a lot of people go to Hazelhead and enjoy themselves, and you know, surely it's not too much to ask for a cup of coffee or something.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you're right. Not good enough.
No, it isn't good enough. And whoever's in charge of that in the council should be phoning in, giving reasons why it's in that mess. And if somebody's not paying attention, throw them out. That's the trouble with the council. They just get to rot in these jobs for another 20 years. If they can't do the job, get out and let some young guy in with a bit of new ideas and new thinking and let him take it over.
Okay, we'll leave them with that message,
okay.
Ali.
Thanks,
many,
Frank.
Many thanks. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Ali Stewart there with some choice words and hard talking and criticism of Aberdeen City Council. Maybe some of the councillors who have been listening to the programme this morning have views on what should be done with Hazelhead. Is it now a spent force? Once the jewel in the crown among Aberdeen's parks, is it now gone and finished and beyond repair? Let's hear your thoughts on Aberdeen 401035.
North Sound 2. Listen again.
Welcome back to the programme. Just before we go to the phone lines again, just let me remind you that by typing in northsound2.com/listen again, you can in fact listen again to this programme as from, well, later on today, right about tea time, shall we say. And all the other talking programmes are there for you to listen to as well, as well as other programmes on the station. So that's northsound2.com/listen again. Let's go to the phones and talk to Jim. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Frank. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. You've got something to say about Hazelhead, have you?
Yeah, well, that chap that was on just now speaking about the state of Hazelhead Park, well, I've been in Aberdeen for 30 years now.
Uh-huh.
And my children have grown up here. We used to go to Hazelhead nearly every weekend at the zoo and the park and all that. Like,
yeah.
And it was lovely.
Yeah.
But this last few years has just totally gone downhill. Like, I mean, I'm with the boy 100%. It's a disgrace.
Right.
He was saying about get some new blood into the council and get some good thinking going and new ideas.
Yeah.
Well, there's one of the new bloods in the council come up with a cracking way of making money. Charge the councillors for parking their cars.
Right. This is Councillor John West.
That's one of the young bloods. Now, they've all turned all the old dinosaurs that are still in the council.
But,
saying, oh, no, we can't do that.
Isn't that a cheap shot?
Pardon?
Isn't that a cheap shot by Councillor West, say, charge the councillors £200 a year for parking in the townhouse?
Why not?
Well, it's a perk, isn't it? I mean, there are lots of people who park freely at their work.
Why should the councillors have perks when the council workers don't?
Yeah, why should people who park in their workplace free of charge have perks?
Workplace, that's not actually a perk, though, really, is it, when you think about it?
Well, if you're going to your workplace and your workplace, your company has a parking lot that you can use, that's fine. That's what you would expect to do. And that's basically what the councillors are doing, aren't they? I mean,
But, I mean, like I was saying, they're always complaining they're short of money, they've got no way of raising funds. That is an ideal way of raising funds. Oil companies and that with big car parks, they always set aside an area for car parks for their employees specifically.
Uh-huh.
Because people travel from great distances. Most of these councillors that are in Aberdeen City Council are local. They could take the bus, take a bike.
Well, I don't disagree with you on that that one. I think the use of public transport, and I certainly know that some of them do use public transport. For example, Councillor Kevin Stewart is now an MSP. He uses the bus, and so do others. But here's the other issue. Here's another question for you then on that issue, Jim. Do you think if Councillor West owned a car, he would be calling for a £200 charge for councillors?
Well, I hope that he would, but he probably wouldn't.
Yeah.
But there's, like other perks you were saying, I'm a disabled driver. Now, I've actually got to pay £20 for 3 years for the privilege of owning a disabled badge.
Yeah.
And there isn't any disabled parking bays in Aberdeen unless it's green.
Yeah.
So if I've got to pay and I'm disabled, why shouldn't the councillors pay when they're not?
Yeah. But presumably, well, you know, we know that as normal citizens, if you like, if you can be normal if you join the council, if you're elected, they will have to pay their £200 or whatever it is to park at their door.
Well, that's their problem. Buy a bike.
I think you're being very tough on them, really.
Yeah, somebody's got
to
be.
Jim, so you've been here 40 years, have you?
30
years, right.
Yep.
Where are you from?
Londonshire originally.
Are you? Oh, well.
But I was brought up in Australia.
Good. Oh, well, so as far as the disabled, this is an interesting area as well. The disabled badge situation, I never understood. I never understand what's the difference between a blue badge and a green badge. Maybe you can explain that to me.
Well, your
blue badges for people with just motability problems, again, with like walking around great distances, but your green badge is more for your wheelchair users.
I see. Right. It's certainly a lot of money for people to fork out, so...
If I've got to fork out for it, I've got to find it from somewhere.
Yeah.
So can the councillors.
Yeah. Okay, we'll leave you. They'll be listening. Some of them will be listening. Many of them listen to this programme.
Yeah, they've fiat the phone up.
Maybe they'll call in. Maybe they'll call in, Jim. Thanks very much.
Okay, Frank.
Nice to talk to you. Thank you. Maybe they are listening. Any of the councillors have views on the plea by Councillor John West that they should pay £200 for the privilege of parking in the underground car park at Aberdeen Townhouse? Give me a call. You know the number, Aberdeen 40 10 35. And the same goes for anybody out there who's listening this morning with views on that point or any of the issues we've discussed today, or indeed anything that's happening within your community. In fact, it's a great way to tell the councillors who do listen to this programme what is happening in your community and what's going right and what's going wrong and what they should be doing about it. Give me a call on Aberdeen 40 1035 and you can keep me company for the closing moments of this programme. We've still got plenty of time though, so you might want to back up Jim Parker there, who's saying that Councillor John West is right to call for a £200 parking charge to be levied on those councillors who, after all, are just going to their work, aren't they? And some workplaces, I don't know if there are any workplaces that actually charge their employees to park their carts. Maybe you know about this. Let me know what you're thinking. Aberdeen 40 1035. Calls are beginning to come in again. If we can get them on air as soon as we can. That's a message for John, who's sitting on his own answering the phones. I don't know if he can hear me. Probably not. I think he's deaf. Let's hear what your thoughts are as we talk to Barry. Good morning,
hello.
Barry.
Hello there, Frank.
How are you today?
Fine, thank you. Just a slightly different subject.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's the councillors that approve of this as well. You've got five bookmakers all within 1 yard, 10 yards of each other in Union Street.
Yeah.
I'll tell you where about. Across the road from the music hall, you've got William Hills.
Yes.
Right beside that one, next door to it, you've got a Ladbrokes.
Yeah.
Right across the road, again at a music hall, you've got another Ladbrokes. Across the road a little bit, you've got Betfred. Across that road, you've got Corals.
Uh-huh.
That's five bookmakers within 10, 20 yards of each other. Is that a council allow that?
Yes. I've got a thing about betting. I've got a thing about betting and gambling being promoted as hard as it is in newspapers and radio and television. And I think, you know, I think some of these big name stars, for example, and let's not, you know, we don't want to go into the specific bookies or betting shops, but some of these big name stars who promote betting, they're paid money to promote gambling online and on, you know, and in bookie shops and so on, I think are doing themselves a disservice. Are you a betting man?
Yeah, I do, but what I'm concerned about is I've got a lot of friends who've got that are problem gamblers.
Yes.
And it seems you can't walk within a few yards in Aberdeen and Union Street. Now, you know that exactly, I know you can't name names, but you've got five betting offices.
Yes. Yeah.
Five of them.
Yeah.
And they must be granted licences from the council.
Yes.
Why do they do that? I mean, that's pure greed, isn't it?
Well, it's also the law. It's difficult to refuse a license application. You know, it has to be really kind of, it really has to be a strong refusal, a reason for refusal. It's the misery that gambling can cause. It doesn't cause it all the time, of course, but I know from secondhand experience, having written a book on Steve Patterson, and his real problems with gambling, that over a 34-year period, for example, from the age of 16, he reckoned that he gambled away something in the region of £1.3 million.
That's right, I remember that, yeah.
And that is, it's horrific, it's horrendous. And of course, it impacts, like all addictions, on other people, doesn't it? Yeah.
Well, I've got friends who are trying to stop gambling, and they're saying to me that you can't walk. I try to walk past, but as soon as I walk past one, there's another one right beside me.
Yeah, I agree with you, Barry, you're absolutely right. Listen, that music that you hear in the background signals that we're coming to the end of the show.
Right, thanks very much.
Listen, good to hear from you. Keep in touch with the programme. I like to hear all the views. The phone lines are going bananas right now.
Okay, and thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Barry.
Cheers.
The phone lines are going crazy. They're lighting up all over the place, and we can't get you on because you've left it too late, ladies and gentlemen. So all I can say is thanks to those who did contribute today. It's good to hear from you. Keep in touch with the programme. Remember, Bill Torrance is up next after the news.
Listen again to what you've missed and access exclusive online-only content at northsound2.com.